Hey there, listeners. Check out Heritage Radio Network and join a community dedicated to meaningful, transformative food storytelling. Our Trova podcast, dedicated to all things food, combined with our impactful education programs, entertain, educate, and inform. Dive into the world of HRN, discover your next favorite food podcast, and learn more about our Storyteller Academy at heritageradionetwork.org.
This week on the line, we welcome Tim Hollingsworth, formerly of the French Laundry, a man who had the discipline to run that restaurant for 10 years, one of the greatest restaurants, well, in the world. And now my restaurant neighbor, his restaurant Odium, is just down the block from Danny Boy's Pizza here in Los Angeles. Tim Hollingsworth is now reinterpreting some of America's favorite fast food with Chain, his pop-up, kind of like, I don't know what it is. He's going to have to explain it.
Chain, reinventing all your favorite fast food junky treats. It's so much fun. I can't wait to talk to Tim about how he goes from French Laundry to fast food.
The man with the most piercing blue eyes.
On the line.
Okay. Tim Hollingsworth.
Yes.
Is that of German descent?
I believe so. I believe it's English and German.
Like Texas on the Mayflower.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually my stepfather's last name.
Oh.
So
interesting.
Yeah, I was born a Chavez, which wasn't really my last name either. That was my mother's last name whenever I was born. And then my dad, who raised me, gave me his name, of Hollingsworth.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
There you go. Yeah. There's an exclusive right
that's
there.
That's not on the internet. Tim Hollingsworth's career path reads kind of like a fairy tale, partially because there's not that much in there. So it's very steep. So you're just like, yo, I moved from Texas to Placerville, California as a kid. Worked in construction, which you're a big man. You've got the hands for it. You could swing a hammer.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely always a skinny kid, but I was strong. My dad made me lift a lot of things.
Really? Were you like carrying sheets of sheetrock? Does your back hurt?
My back hurts. Yeah, for the rest of my life.
People are like, oh, the kitchen's hard. I was like,
my knees hurt.
Try like carrying a sheet of sheetrock up a flight of stairs when you're 14 years old and see how that works out.
Or plywood.
Yeah, plywood's with you.
Yeah.
So he worked his way up as a sous chef position in his hometown restaurant and landed a gig at the French Laundry. At 21 years old?
21, yeah.
In 2001. Wow. So for it just as context, in 2001, the French Laundry was by far and away, like leagues and bounds, the most sought after culinary job in America. Impossible to get a job there. Universally recognized as the best restaurant in America and probably the world. So there's a lot, there's a lot of competition around the world for blah, blah, blah. This was a really special time and a very special place. So to get a job like that, from what I understood, you work for a fancy chef at a fancy restaurant and they like tell the chef there that they've got a candidate and then maybe you can get a job. It's not like you just apply for it. So that's a really special thing to have that opportunity as a young person, which I'm interested to understand like how that happened. And then you worked there for 11 years, and you helped to open Per Se in New York City, which is another 3 Michelin star, super fancy, very delicious. I had many meals there. I had a lot of good meals there. Thank you for that. 3 Michelin star restaurant in New York, and then came back, continued at the French Laundry to sous chef, and then became the chef of the French Laundry, which is like, you know.
That's...
I don't know. You're just done now. You just
kind of stop there.
It's kind of like an athlete when you win the gold record and you're the gold medal and you're like, now I can give up and the rest of my life is downhill. So we'll find out how that's going. But there's a level of discipline that is mind-boggling to hold and maintain a job like that. So I imagine that's a challenge and something to... I'm not done yet. Hold on. After the French Laundry, Tim moved down to Los Angeles. He opened Odium, which when I heard about Odium, I heard, oh, it's the best restaurant in Los Angeles, which
That's great.
That was the reputation that it had, like immediately, which is pretty special. And as a person who's dined there, I can corroborate that it is a spectacular and special restaurant. It is still quite delicious and it had like very beautifully architecturally. And it had like open live wood fire. I remember when I first went in there, I was like, oh, this is very cool looking. Very, very special. And then But the next step in your career is something kind of unexpected and interesting. So Chain is a pop-up, still Odium, still all the other stuff. So it's not like you just decided, yo, I'm just going to try and make like tacos from Taco Bell good, and that's all I'm going to do for the rest of my life. However, Chain is a pop-up, invite-only restaurant that makes gourmet versions of classic chain restaurant favorites that has somehow been embraced by the chains themselves. So it would be like if I was like, yo, I'm going to do Taco Bell better. And then Taco Bell was like, oh, thank you. Let's do that together, which is shocking and pretty awesome. And there's a lot to unpackage here. So you're kind of casually hanging out, eating fancy Pizza Hut with Jimmy Fallon, which is another situation where you're like, yo, the fairy tale continues. And in addition to his extraordinary career in the restaurants, Tim is a loyal and loving husband, a father of four, from what I can see on the internet, very beautiful children. Mm-hmm. And you're wrestling jiu-jitsu with the 10th Planet guys, which is like not the whole thing. So we're very excited to dig in. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Wow. We're supposed to introduce yourself. My name is Daniel Holzman.
And I'm Amanda Freitag.
This is On the Line. It's a podcast if you're not here yet.
If you're not in this world yet.
You've never been.
There's so many things I want to talk about. Tim, thank you for being here.
I know
you
have great to be here.
Obviously extremely busy schedule, but you have an illustrious career. Discipline obviously is the through line, I mean, especially when you're talking about jiu-jitsu. And I just want to talk about Chain because I think that's really fun and interesting. And Dan said invite only, which I didn't know. Invite only. So can you just tell us, we'll go back to Thomas Keller because I'm fascinated with him and that. But first, let's talk about how Chain works.
Yeah.
How does it work? I couldn't just go there tonight if I wanted to and have the best version of Taco Bell.
No. So it's basically like we do pop-up events.
Okay.
And a lot of times they might be like marketing events for larger corporations like, you know, Taco Bell, Pizza Hut. And really what it is we took like a sort of a new approach where almost like a sneaker drop, you know, where you sign up via text and then you get text message, okay, this event is going to happen this day at this time, and then, you know, the first people to respond can get in. Then there's a long waiting list of people that weren't able to get in, and we just throw kind of like a very sort of like casual, fun, almost like experiential sort of walkthrough of this event. And it's like an homage to whatever, you know, chain food or Americana food in general, as well as like specifically to whatever that is, the menu that night.
Right. So, okay. So there has to be, which coming from a high-end chef like you, the big reveal of what your favorite like fast food, dirty food, guilty pleasure is. Like, obviously that's why you want to do this.
Yeah.
Is it Pizza Hut? Is it Taco Bell? Is it McDonald's? What is it?
I mean, so for me, like I haven't, there was a time in my life where I didn't eat chain food for, I mean, like, I don't know, decades it felt like, right? Like I grew up a little bit with it, but it was always a special occasion for me. My mom cooked the majority of our meals.
What type of food was she cooking?
Like kind of like Southern food, like chicken and dumplings, Sunday pot roast, chili, kind of like Southern, like Texas, like Tex-Mex.
And then you grew up in Houston, correct?
I was born there, but I moved to California in like second grade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
So I was really raised in California, but like, you know, with very kind of Southern like food and like hospitality, like I don't know, just like very Southern, like Southern Baptist kind of very very strict kind of household, but like a lot of rules.
Your knuckles are scarred.
So like the chain food for me was always like it was a special treat. Yeah. So for me it's bringing that nostalgia back. And if I had to say, like, okay, my favorite, like, sort of cheat, I mean, when I was at the French Laundry and I would drive home, you know, it was a couple-hour drive, 2 or 3-hour drive, I would always stop and get, like, Taco Bell.
Wow.
Really?
And that was, like, the one, that was, like, my sort of, like, cheat.
Is that because it was a dollar or was it because you loved it?
It was, like, a cheat. It was, like, it felt like a cheat meal. Like, I never ate it in general. Like, you know, like, I mean, I grew up with it, but I never really ate it, you know, and I never really ate fast food. So it was just kind of, like, this sort of cheat cheat meal for me.
Can I reveal something about myself?
You do. The only thing I'll say is that there's no restaurant in the world that can use four ingredients and turn them into an entire menu like Taco Bell.
Yeah, and keep coming up with new items. They've got
four ingredients on the menu and they're like 90 menu items.
I'm going to look into the camera and say this. I've never eaten Taco Bell.
Ever?
Ever.
In your life?
Ever.
Well, we could go if you want.
I've never eaten it. And Kenzie Teller, who does my social media with me, wants to film me going into a Taco Bell and eating it. Because I've never done it. I've never had it.
Wow.
It just wasn't. I grew up in New
Jersey. Have you had Del Taco? Because they've got a great medium spiced sauce.
No.
I also grew up with no fast food. My mom was like a real hippie. No, but
we had it the same way your family had it on like Friday nights. We would go to White Castle.
Yeah.
As a family, and we'd watch them make the square burgers with the onions on the griddle, and I'd just look in the window.
First slider in America.
It was the best. And we'd get them stacked, you know how they stack the boxes together, and then we'd eat them in the car almost all the way, and then we'd get home and eat the rest, and it was terrible for you, but it was, we would only have it like maybe once a month. Like it would be like a Friday night, once a month. We're going to White Castle.
Taco Bell's still, White Castle's still family owned and they like make all their own equipment and they're a spectacular, interesting.
Very few of them left in the country.
Yeah, I think they're still like doing quite well though.
Yeah.
From what I understand. I think that Harold guy, he did good for them.
So that was
frozen food too.
Obviously I've had other fast food, but I've never had Taco Bell. So just wanted to add that in. But I like that's your favorite because now it's going to motivate me to have it even more so.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's just it's the one, I don't know. It's always kind of good. It's just like, I don't know, Mexican food. Not that it's like straight up Mexican food, obviously, but it's just like
deeply traditional throughout Mexico to talk about.
Okay, here's another question, which just seems naive. Do you think there's MSG?
Oh, yeah.
I hope so.
100%. That's one of the four ingredients.
I just want, because I think that's the craveability about certain foods like that, right? Like, I've always, like, been a Dorito girl and
it's
I love
MSG,
chips and Fritos
sure.
and like that idea of just wanting more and more and more, like it's addictive.
Yeah,
and it has to
be. My favorite thing now is that they've like taken the MSG off the menu, but they just sneak in free glutamates and add salt, and then they're like, "What happens after that?" That's MSG. We can't speak to the science that happens after that, but we didn't put MSG. We just put all the stuff there.
Yeah,
you know, it's like we didn't make the baby. We just
Anyway, back to chain and just, you know, loving these things. And so who decides if it's Pizza Hut night, Whopper night, Taco Bell night? Like, do you decide and then invite the people? Or do they say, hey, Tim's doing this great thing. I'm in love with In-N-Out. I want him to recreate it for me.
Yeah, I mean, it started out with us deciding, or really kind of like me deciding what that menu item would be, kind of a collaboration. We'd ask like people on the internet too, like, okay, like, what do you guys want? Like, sort of like, what are your favorite things? What do you want us to redo? And then one day the head chef from Taco Bell came to like one of the pop-ups and was like, we love what you guys are doing. You guys want to collaborate? And we're like, yeah, for sure. Like, let's do something, you know? So we did like a playoff of a Crunchwrap Supreme. And which you've never had, obviously.
But I've heard of it, and I know what it involves, and I really want to have it.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, like it kind of like snowballed from there. After that, you know, we started getting calls from a lot of large companies that wanted to, you know, us to throw sort of like these marketing events for them. And then last year in December, we actually did a festival. We did a chain fest, which was, we threw our own food festival here in Los Angeles.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and we're working on that this year. We want to do two locations. We want to do one in New York and one in Los Angeles.
Do you do it with the chain restaurants?
Yeah, absolutely.
See, that's brilliant. Major because partners. My first thought about chain was, wow, Pizza Hut's going to be pissed or their copyright's going to shut you down. Like,
we thought we'd get like a cease and desist or something like that. We're kind of hoping for it, to be honest with you, you know, a little bit more attention.
A little bad press is good press kind of situation.
But they like really loved it. And I mean, I think it comes from like this like sort of like true
it's like
appreciation of this food. So like we just did Pizza Hut, and Pizza Hut for me, like truthfully, I haven't had Pizza Hut in literally decades, but except for when we did the official thing, we went to headquarters, tried their pizza, all that kind of thing. But
are they doing well? They like I feel like they lost to Domino. They lost the delivery wars, and it was like, oh.
Domino's did like I mean, they built the, like, their own platform or whatever. So they, I think that's why they did so well.
But pizza, nobody has a stained glass kind of like lamp like pizza. Those pizza lamps are spectacular.
Definitely, and for me, it was like literally, it's that like personal pan pizza in like the, you know, the cast iron pan. And it's like for you as a kid, I can like still smell like that buttery crust. It's probably my earliest food memory is being at a Pizza Hut in Houston and being like, if it was a flash flood and I was stuck there for a few hours. And I remember like being there, I can smell the room. I remember like the salad bar, the red cups, the stained glass lamp. Yeah. And the
salad bar. Yes. Were there chickpeas on the salad bar?
Probably.
I'm trying to remember what was on the.
I think so. There was a lot of kale. I think they were the largest
kale. Like, oh, wow. But the kale was just for
only. Yeah.
It wasn't for consumption. It was consumption. Decorative. It was decorative kale.
Yeah. They bought the most. Yet. Yeah. Yeah. They bought the most kale in the United States.
I know. That's great. But
nobody. They didn't feed it anybody.
And by the way, there's an argument that says that's where it should have stayed. Yeah. In all fairness.
Hey, now.
God bless you all.
I'm a kale loving girl. Oh, right,
absolutely.
Here.
For real.
That's a different kale. That's like Cavallonero.
That's not like... I like the high-end kale. No, but I just love this idea. And I think anybody who, you know, is even afraid to say, like, I loved Taco Bell or I loved Pizza Hut, you're making that okay.
Yeah, I think it gives people an excuse to be able to, like, champion something that they really like.
Yes.
You know, like, they're a guilty pleasure for them, maybe, you know? And I think that, especially in LA, like, we don't have, there's not a lot of chain restaurants like in the city necessarily. Right. So some of these, you know, you're giving people an opportunity to come and like eat that kind of food. And sort of a really cool environment. So it's like video games, and like sometimes we'll have the salad bar, or we'll do like an ice cream bar out of the salad bar. We make like fun cocktails, and like, you know, we have one of our founders, Nikki. His dad was like one of the largest collectors of Disney memorabilia. And with that came like a bunch of like chain stuff. So, you know, you'll see like Colonel Sanders, you'll see like Ronald McDonald, the Grimace table and all that kind of stuff that you sat on as a kid at McDonald's.
So have you like, done a KFC night yet?
We have not done KFC, but we do fried chicken.
And, I wonder if you can get the secret recipe. this is gonna be a huge upset.
I know.
I feel kernel. Like we forget now, because we go to these, you know, you see these chain restaurants, you kind of take it for granted, that the reality is these started as an individual restaurant that was so compelling and great at some point that it drove the long-term growth and success that we now see today. And obviously through the iterations, there's been quality changes, and you know, you can say what you want, but like, McDonald's was the coolest restaurant in its day, and it was the place where everybody wanted to go. And like, as a chef guy opening restaurants, you're like, man, imagine the impact if I could aspire to have impact like that. That's something that's beyond my like dream for myself. It's pretty amazing what they've done.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, some of them were like, I think Taco Bell and McDonald's were opened up like across the street from each other kind of deal or whatever. Like, there was a Mexican, I forget the story of Taco Bell, but there's like the original one is like close to here, you know, and it was like a Glen Bell or whatever. It was an existing restaurant. And I think he like went in there and like basically kind of copied it and was seeing what McDonald's was doing at the time. And was like, okay, I can turn this into something.
It's interesting how many copycats there's been for chain restaurants like that. Okay. So you work with Thomas Keller for a really long time. Has he ever come to one of these pop-ups?
He's not been to chain, but they're not like all the, like, you know, he's in LA less than he used to be.
Yeah.
But so he's been to Odeon many times. Chain wasn't around then, but he hasn't been yet. No.
Have you guys ever like rolled through a drive through together and been like, TK, what do you want? You want a double cheeseburger? You want?
You would think I must have. I'm trying to think. I'm like, but
I
want
to know what his guilty pleasure is. You know, Thomas Keller, one of the top chefs in the world. Like, what is his guilty pleasure? I wonder.
Caviar.
Come on.
No. Like, I have them fed caviar and oysters by my harem.
Like, I want to see him dipping into a bag of like Takis, like really spicy. Yeah. You know, like, does he have a thing? Have you ever had that moment with him?
No. I mean, he's
so polished. He's so buttoned up.
He is. And it's like, that's real. Like, I've seen him in a lot of different situations, you know, and it's like I'm trying to think. I'm like, I don't think so. I mean, In-N-Out, for sure he likes In-N-Out.
Yes. Okay, that's good to know. Yeah.
If you don't like In-N-Out, you're a Nazi. I mean, it's delicious.
Yeah. I mean, we used to have In-N-Out for staff meals sometimes at the laundry, so it was like,
That's cool.
We're definitely In-N-Out, huge In-N-Out fans.
Yeah, I'll never forget. I was a chef at a restaurant in New York called Cesca, and he came in for dinner, and we had this... We would extrude our own rigatoni, but we would make it into a pasta al forno in this, you know, ceramic dish that would go into a wood-fired oven. But it is like, it was the heaviest dish on the menu, and it was super comfort food, and that's what he ordered. And I was like, no! Like, there's so many other beautifully plated things and lighter and brighter and complex flavors. I mean, he loved it.
Yeah.
But I was like, not that one, yeah. You know, but I think he wanted that. He wanted comfort food. He wanted something bubbling out of the wood oven, and obviously he had a good time. But I was as a chef, I was like, there were so many other things I wanted.
I want you to try this.
Yes. I mean, of course I sent him some stuff, but you know, I was like, that's so interesting to see what he ordered.
Mm-hmm. Can I, so you're like the thing that I'm most interested about, obviously, like all the stuff in your life, great guy. It's the discipline and drive, and why does a person put, like, to be in the position of having to run a restaurant like that and do, and to even be in a position where you can grow into that role, like, where did the drive come from? And more importantly, like, looking back at how, obviously it's brought you a lot of success.
Yeah.
But, like...
French Laundry in particular, you're talking about?
Just the drive to work at that high level, like be singularly focused. And then when you look back, is it worth it? Or should I be like if I have kids, I don't have kids, but should I be like, smoke the pot and enjoy yourself. Don't work that hard because it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Or is it like, man, I have this deep sense of satisfaction and it's brought so much joy and I've learned for my future. Like, help me understand. Should I be more disciplined?
What a journey that must have been though.
I mean, I think that like, everybody needs to figure it out for themselves, right? And there's a time in life. The reason why I left the laundry is because I knew that I wanted to like start a family, and I wanted to have more balance in life. And
what was the schedule like for you there? Just for somebody who doesn't understand what
you're
like.
For sure working 5 days a week. You're for sure working like
all day.
Yeah, I mean, as a commis, I got there at probably 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. I left at like 5:30 to 7:30.
Yeah.
And as the chef, I was there as a sous chef or a line cook. I was there from like 11 in the morning if I had no meetings. And then we'd get out, you know, it could be 2 o'clock in the morning, could be 1 o'clock and you can get to the bar maybe, you know, like
get to the bar before it closes.
Yeah, that was always like the goal maybe.
Yeah. I mean, those are 13-hour days, 14-hour days. And that's normal, especially in a high end restaurant like that.
Yeah. Is that still a realistic, I mean,
I would think so in that high end restaurants like that. I mean, how many employees did you have under you
at the laundry?
Kitchen guys.
There was two teams of eight, there's probably like 30 cooks, 24 to 30 cooks. And like some of them were not paid. They were stages.
Yes.
But
do you like to eat fancy, kind of like those tasting menus now? Is that still a thing that you're into and enjoy? On the Line podcast is brought to you by Danny Boy's Famous Original Pizza. From downtown Los Angeles and Westwood, Los Angeles, Danny Boy's Pizza started with a singular goal of producing the best slice of pizza that we could possibly create. We make New York style pizza with the finest ingredients, built by a team of fun-loving, like-minded, culinary-driven individuals, producing slices of pizza that are not going to empty your wallet, but they will fill your belly. Come down to Danny Boy's and say hi. I am on the line, cooking them up for you, as well as on the line with Amanda Freitag here in the studio for you.
I'd say there was a departure for many, many years, like on like going and eating that kind of food. And now, like, sure, every once in a while I like to do it, but mostly I like homey style.
Do you have a favorite? Like, I ate a Cato. Have you been to Cato? I had a tasting menu of Cato.
I had a Cato.
Do you have like some other kind of like meals that are like, well, you know, I'm traveling around the country. Like, that was actually worth it. Like, you know, spend the money. It's not just the money. It's like, sit there for 4 fucking hours and eat. But is there, are there restaurants that are worth it for you that you really love? That you, I don't need to put you on the spot. I'm just curious.
There's not one that I would, that comes to mind. Yeah. But there's, you know, I definitely enjoy going and seeing somebody's perspective and, you know, seeing a lot of techniques that, you know, maybe were very familiar for me from my past, and how I would say I used to cook. I see a lot of techniques, a lot of like interpretations of, you know, like I went to this sushi restaurant the other day, this week. A buddy of mine was in town from Austin. He wanted to go eat someplace, so we went to the sushi restaurant downtown. Very I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was 715. And you know, they made like this peanut tofu and like whatever, and I was like, oh, that reminds me of, like, you know, I went hiking the other day in my backyard, and it was like the oak trees and all the acorns and stuff like falling down.
I went hiking in my backyard. Like,
well, we're definitely not in New York anymore.
Kansas stuff.
In my backyard, there's like this sort of ravine or creek or whatever, and then it heads up to like the national forest. So like I like to hike out there sometimes.
That's really cool.
And I saw acorns, and I was like, oh, just kind of like remembering about like, oh, when like Corey was a chef at the laundry, he used to do this acorn like tofu, and like, you know, just like sort of like, I just wonder if they did like it was like a similar technique that they were using. It was just like reminiscent of like somebody taking something that has nothing to do, you know, it's not a soybean, it's right. You know, they're making it with peanuts, and it's like, you know, like, oh, you know, this is an interesting technique. Oh, I remember when we used to use this technique like however many years ago.
And are you still, so like, I don't know. I was reading like Eric Rupert's book the other day, and he's got this, like, he was talking about making a mistake in his plating because he was supposed to be doing something that was rustic, but he like caught himself making it too fancy. Mm-hmm. And do you find yourself like stuck there or are you able to just kind of keep it simple?
I would say my simple is more fancy.
Yeah, that's your style. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's really your style.
Yeah, I came down and opened a barbecue restaurant here, and everybody's like, oh, like the barbecue, like it's like all plated fancies and stuff. It's like literally.
I just put it on the plate.
There's like pickles, you know, like pickled carrots. And like, that's not like, this isn't fancy necessarily. Right. Yeah. But people thought, perception of it compared to like how barbecue is normally presented, you know, the people thought it was fancy. And it's like, not
did
really
that
fancy.
Restaurant work? Is it open? Did it not work or what happened?
That restaurant, it was working at the time for sure. But there was, at the time I had different partners. It was the same partners as I had at Odeum at one time. And then there was kind of a falling out. So
I always wonder about that, like the harsh reality of you work in this restaurant that's got like this huge staff, and you know, it's not normal. Like the French Laundry isn't a normal restaurant. It's an abnormal experience. And then when you come down to like reality and you're like, oh, I gotta make a living and I gotta actually open a restaurant where people can afford to eat there, like, how do you transition and make that a thing?
I mean, I would say people always ask me like, oh, do you recommend culinary school? I never went to culinary school.
I was gonna ask you, did you go?
I never went, but I was like, I mean, that was sort of the precursor of me going to the French Laundry, was like going and visiting the culinary school in Hyde Park and spending a week there, kind of checking it out and being like, okay, this isn't for me. Right. I'm going to go work for the best. I'm going to go get a job.
How did you get a job at the French Laundry? Sorry.
You started as a stage, an intern?
I called and made a reservation and made sure that Thomas was going to be there, and I ate dinner there, and I wanted to turn in my resume. I turned in my resume. He gave me a business card, and I called and I called and I called and I called and I called. And over and over again until like one day I was like, okay, come try out. So I tried out, did a stage for a day, and then I kept calling and calling and calling. And one day I received a letter in the mail that I'd been hired.
Wow.
Yeah.
Persistence.
Yeah.
Are your parents disciplined? Like, where did you get that from?
I think it was just sort of being young, naive, like a little bit like, when I showed up at the French Laundry kitchen, like I had no business being there. You know what I mean?
That's the question. Like, I want to be a fly on the wall when you were like, I want to be here. I want to call every day until they let me in this kitchen.
Yeah.
Were you cocky? Were you just like, I should be here?
I mean, I did very well in my hometown restaurant, right? I did very, very well. But it wasn't like a competitive kitchen like the French Laundry was, where you have like, oh, this guy worked at Danielle and this one for Jean George and this one for Ducasse. And it's like, you know, everybody had a resume.
You're like, I just popped up from Vassarville.
But I had like a very strong work ethic that my father instilled in me. Like, I worked since I was in like fifth or sixth grade every single weekend with my dad, every single summer, like did a lot of construction. I think because of that worth ethic. I mean, when I did construction with my dad, I would work like during the summer, I would go to work at, you know, we'd live an hour and a half away from work. I'd go there, get to work by like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. I'd work all day, then go back to the shop. I'd work all night, go back to the shop. I'd work all day, and then I would go home and I would sleep. And then I would do the next thing, like the next
child labor is awesome.
Like, it was just like,
that's why he's got four kids. He's like, these burgers ain't making themselves.
He's starting a team.
And my dad was right there next to me. So it's not like, you know.
No, of course. He wasn't abusing that. Yeah. I was just kidding. But so, that's discipline. That's where the discipline started. That's it.
Yeah. So
that's
got
to be it.
I was definitely in over my head when I started there. But I was like, I ran everywhere. I worked harder. I didn't mind like working longer than everybody else. And I wanted to learn. If you ask people, like, I don't know if you know John Fraser.
Yes.
John Fraser was, I was like his commie. And, you know, he'll be like, oh, Tim Hollingsworth, like best commie I've ever had kind of deal. I mean, that's right when I started, had like zero experience basically. So, and it was just the desire to learn, you know.
It's that drive.
Yeah.
It was that, your hunger.
It's almost like creepy and weird for me to say this, but your voice is so soothing. It's like almost putting me in a trance. You've got such a beautiful, deep voice. Did you not hear that?
Doing voiceovers, Tim?
I'm like, oh man, I just want to listen to you talk about this. It really sounds very good when you talk about it.
It is dreamy. Yeah, it's magical. Dreamy voice. Yes. Yeah.
I close my eyes.
No, but I had a beautiful experience once at French Laundry, and I remember just like, it's such a, if anybody who's listening has never been there, you know, it's in the middle of wine country. Yeah. It's in Yountville. It is magical and dreamy and sort of ethereal, and you know, it's just a heavenly place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so all the surroundings are perfect. The restaurant is perfect. It's mm-hmm. the perfect product. You know, like there's just, everything is just right. It's very hard to align all those things anywhere else in the world. You know, yeah. It's really difficult. And you know, obviously that restaurant will live on forever, its legacy, no matter what happens to it, it's still mm-hmm. going strong. But I think for any young cook at that time when French Laundry opened, we all wanted to work there.
Oh, yeah.
Every single person. I know I did. I mean, just eating dinner there was probably better than going to culinary school.
Yeah.
You know, I learned so much just from one meal there.
Mm-hmm.
Just from one meal.
I mean,
and that cookbook.
Yes.
The French Laundry cookbook was incredible. Like revolutionary.
It's just a dictionary for chefs. And so if you're listening.
Was it the first restaurant that like really took food and took it away from like, we're going to have a meal. The meal is special, but it's part of the experience to like, the meal is the experience and we're going to elongate it. I feel like that was a big shift or not
and the
really.
Surroundings.
Had that been done before?
The details.
In America?
I don't know. I don't
think
so.
The surroundings, the details, the beauty of everything, the way everything just felt and smelled. And it just, I think, was everything was thought out. And I think it was groundbreaking and trendsetting because there's so much that happened after that.
Mm-hmm.
So many people trying to emulate the French Laundry in many different parts of the country, right? In Maine, in New York, in upstate New York.
And what a disaster if you get like three courses into a 14-course meal and you realize it's not going to be good. Oh my God. It's one thing if you're like a regular human. If you're a chef and you know somebody and you got to sit through and eat it and they're going to, God forbid, give you extra courses and you're like, oh my God.
But there's very few people who did it successfully. Disaster. But you have somebody like Dan Barber who I think did something that emulated French Laundry successfully, mm-hmm. you know, with Blue Hill and Blue Hill Stone
Barns.
Very
special restaurant.
Yes, and what he does is an honoring
the
earth.
What's that crazy place with the Chicago where they put all that funky stuff on the tablecloths and it was like the greatest meal of my life? I thought that was awesome.
Olivia?
They're like, the tablecloths part of the place, I was like, whoa, this is so cool and so much fun. And it was like, man, that for me was a worthwhile tasting menu.
Right.
And I was like, I'm so happy the whole time. I think I was there with my mother, and she pronounced her love to the chef, Grant.
She
told him that she was in love with him. She got a little drunk. It was really great. And he was graceful about that, but there was no chance for her.
But, you know.
It wasn't going to work out.
You're talking about Alinea in Chicago, the very, very talented really chef,
although
Grant
I did get
Ackett's.
That balloon stuck to my whole face.
Yeah.
And with a beard, they have a helium-filled apple taffy dessert, and they brought it. I tried to eat it, and it stuck in my beard.
You just put your face in it?
I'm trying to eat it. You got to deflate it.
I think you're supposed to pop it first.
It stuck. What a disaster.
Let's go there together. I want to see that. But, you know, I think Chef Grant Achatz figured out how to do that in an urban environment, yeah. right? Mm. Like, obviously, Thomas Keller had the beauty of Northern California to do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to do that with technology and molecular gastronomy, like Grant yeah. did, that, I mean, that was fascinating. Or the things that Wiley would do at WD yeah. of 50. Oh, my God. Like, that was hard to do in the middle of a city, mm-hmm. right? You don't have the beauty all surrounding you. So I think of those chefs at that time, you know, following the footsteps of Thomas Keller yeah. and that kind of experience. I mean, I think that's really where experiential dining came from, mm-hmm. you know? And then, of course, the chefs who were using molecular took it to a whole nother yeah. level.
And we used to change the menu every day there at yeah. the laundry.
Yeah.
Every day.
I think there's so many cooks that still want to start their career that way.
Mm-hmm. You should start your career that way. That's spectacular. Like, why would you, if you can work in the greatest and experience and learn from the best and be surrounded with like-minded people that all are interested in that, like, you know, singular purpose? Man, that's the dream. It's yeah. not possible for
but
most.
But so many people will do an we call it a stage, which is a French word for intern or, mm-hmm. or start out unpaid there and then move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
You stayed.
Yeah.
You stayed and moved up the ranks. I think that's a pretty rare scenario.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else still there that has done that or has worked at French Laundry and came up the ranks the same way you did?
When I was there, when I left, was I the longest? I might have been one of the longest people that had worked in the kitchen there, for sure. Now there's people longer.
But that wasn't done. I mean, people took what they needed
yeah.
from their experience.
I mean, people didn't last that long.
And left. Yeah, yes.
They couldn't. Like, it was a very...
And that's the other factor.
It's a very difficult environment to work in. A lot of pressure. And it's every day is hard. But unless you're like... For me, I thrived in that environment. Like, if it's a different environment, maybe I don't thrive. And other people, I've seen very talented people not survive in that environment, but go on and do amazing things.
Right.
So it's not for everyone. Yeah, it's not for everybody. It's a specific type of mindset.
Do you, like, imagine yourself in 5 years having a restaurant? Are you like, man, I want to have a restaurant and this is what it's... Do you have a dream for the next 5 years for yourself that you're, like, working towards or...
As far as
I know, you got the kids and everything. Just in general, are you like, man, I'm really enjoying cooking rustically with, I'm enjoying the chain thing. Like, what do you want to do next? What do you want to do next?
I want to open up more restaurants. I think, you know,
what kind of restaurant?
For me, it's more, I would say, every day, but elevated using great ingredients and just
like, you know, cheesesteaks. Sort of, you're like, I really love cheesesteaks.
A cheesesteak? I do like a cheesesteak.
I want to open a cheesesteak joint.
He's going to do the Arby's pop up. Yeah. Oh, that's going to be.
So, I mean, is that the type of food, like more just kind of everyday food? Do you like healthy food? Are you cooking with vegetables? What?
I mean, I cook with a lot of meat. I eat a lot of steak. Yeah. I always steak. Have. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I always have. Like, I'm
from Texas, dude.
I know. Like, beef, like, I don't know. We didn't have fish growing up at all. Like, literally zero
ocean.
Fish.
Actually, that's not true. They got that whole ocean.
We had chicken and we had beef, and we mostly had beef.
Really?
Yeah. So, and sometimes pork. But
do you have maybe a classic cut? Steakhouse.
Are you like a New York man or a ribeye guy? Or
I would say I used to be a ribeye guy. Now I'm more of a New York guy, but I love tri tip. I love skirt steak. I love like a flat iron too. I mean, I don't really, you know, I love doing barbecue. I cook brisket a lot. I cook beef ribs a lot.
Favorite barbecue city? Are you an Austin man or?
Austin has the best barbecue for sure.
Hands down. Do you have a favorite one? And are you like a
love barbecue? My favorite. You're putting him under the gun right now.
I like love barbecue. I think it's a little, like, people think there's too much seasoning.
If he doesn't say Franklin, he's in trouble.
No, that's not true because Interstellar and there's like amazing. Okay.
All right,
there's
let's
so
hear
many
it.
Great barbecue.
Drum roll. In. Can I get a drum roll?
It
please?
Doesn't exist anymore, but the best that I had when I was there was John Mueller.
Oh, yeah. Well,
there you
that's
go.
Like the,
so you're free of pressure from anybody else because it's not there anymore.
Well, any of these barbecue guys will tell you that...
They're competitive.
All say that, like, it's the time from the grill to your mouth, and at any of those people working at that high level, you can have a spectacular experience, and it's, like, almost interchangeable, like, because if you're making it perfectly, you can, you know, they're playing a perfect game.
Right.
So it's like, maybe you got the perfect cut, you know, if it's not if it's not going from the grill to the hot box to your plate, which is a that's done. That's not even in the game. But if they're doing it at that level where you're waiting in line for it to come off the barbecue, special.
But speaking of competitive, because barbecue guys are competitive, and there's, you know, there's a whole competitive barbecue circuit that if you're not in it, you don't know about it. It's wild. I've met a lot of people who are in that circuit, and it is like a whole underbelly, this whole world. But you
not a lot of skinny people in that game.
Underbelly. Under the weight, under the belt. But you did compete. You've done some cooking competitions on Netflix. It's called the Final Table. Is that what it's called? How so a chef in the caliber of like French Laundry and Odeon and of your caliber don't typically compete, you know, like because there's a lot of because
they already won.
Well, there's a lot of time pressure in those competitions, right? And we don't cook that way, especially in your style of food. How was that experience for you? Obviously, I come from a world of competitive cooking, and I'm around that all the time. So, how was that for you? Like, how did that feel? That experience itself.
I mean, my first time competing was in the Bocuse d'Or. So that was like in 2008 where...
This is the Culinary Olympics, Paul Bocuse in France, America puts a team together. They get the finest, the brightest.
Yes. Yeah.
They put stuff together with tweezers and spectacular.
Right, like Chopped. Sorry, just... Chopped is the Burger King and Bocuse d'Or is the French Laundry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did that. And then... that was a crazy experience.
And that's
did you guys, you guys were not with James Kent, the winning team.
James, I was, I'd competed before James. I competed, after Gavin Kaysen, in 2009. I competed. 2009. Yeah. And 2008. I competed what in America. Make? I made like, I mean, we have specific things you have to do, but I made like, it was like, beef tenderloin, beef cheeks, and beef shank, I believe. And then it was cod with some type of shrimp and whatever. But it's you're like creating platters.
A work of art masterpiece.
Yeah, you're creating platters that had to be presented and paraded around the room.
Wow.
You know, by a bunch of chefs and toasts and stuff like that. Yes, yes. And then you have to like break down that platter and plate individual plates, and that has to be delivered and to eat. You do a meat course, or you do a fish course, and then you do a meat course. Both of them are judged by different people.
In is the, this in a one-day event, or does it go a, over it,
the competition is a 5.5 hour event for all that.
Five
for that.
And a half hours. Yeah. Okay.
In a world where there's like starving people, do you feel ever like what?
It's okay.
Yo, I'm just saying, like there are people starving to death in the world, and we're like pomping around with like truffles and foie gras. So I question it myself because I eat fancy food. I eat at fancy restaurants. I spend a lot of money on food. It's important to me. I love it. It's my but I sometimes I feel guilty about it, and I question whether as a human being I'm like leaving the world better than I found it. Like, should we eat 9 species of fish for sushi, or is it like some hedonistic, you know, horrible thing we're doing? I don't know. Do you think about that ever?
Yeah, I definitely think about it. I mean, I think about the importance of like, you know, your food and where your food comes from, as well as like not wasting food is a big thing for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm reminded of a story. I lived in Mount Washington before. I live in La Cañada here in LA, but Mount Washington, when I lived there, like I had chickens, I had a garden. And I remember one time I had a, you know, a sample chicken, somebody sent me a sample chicken. It's like, whatever, had the head on, had the feet on and everything like that. I'm cooking the chicken. My wife, for whatever reason, is going out on, I don't know, you know, but it's me and my 3 kids at the time, and I'm making dinner for them. And my daughter Hunter, who is probably 5 years old, you know, is, you know, seeing the chicken and being like, Daddy, is that one of our chickens from the backyard? I go, no. You know.
Hunter is not a hunter.
And, you know, she's like halfway through the meal. She's like, oh, I think it's really sad that, you know, we're eating the chicken. And like, you know, and I'm like, you know, yes, but, you know, this chicken is not like necessarily a wild chicken. It's like raised, you know, it's like farmed and like, you know, all of these things, telling her the story. And then it's like, you know, afterwards she comes back to me and she's like, you know, Daddy, I'm still sad about, you know, dinner, and I'm like cleaning up in the kitchen and whatnot. And I'm like, well, you know, come here, look at this. And like, you know, here's, I'm making, these are the bones, I'm making a stock, you know, like, I have her taste the stock or whatever. She's okay. She comes back even later and she's like, Dad, you know, like, can we honor the chicken? I'm like, Aww. Look, I'm like, here's the chicken. Here's the bones. They're in the compost bin, you know, in this compost bin, we're going to like actually, you know, like it'll decompose in our compost and it'll, and then we'll use it. Yeah. We'll use it in the garden. And like, it will give nutrients and like help grow our plants and stuff like that. So it'll continue to feed us. So we're going to celebrate the chicken's life and honor it like in this sort of way. And she's, you know, she's kind of blown away by, you know, by the story and whatnot, but it's like, that's important. Yes. It's important to like, to kind of like care about where, yes, we indulge in food. And that's like, you know, it's one of my hobbies as well, you know, both cooking and eating and experiencing, but ultimately I think it does matter. And I think it like, it's also the legacy in which we leave to our children is like, I guess the closest.
I love that she asked all those questions and she wanted
like
to
a 5-year-old
honor like, the bird. Yeah. And
she chose the word honor, you know,
that's amazing. And I think that wouldn't happen unless you had chickens, like, you know, and for somebody who grows up in a city or in a suburban life that doesn't see that, you just think of food as food you grab in a grocery store.
Yeah.
He thought twice about getting a cow now. He was like, I like steak way too much. And they are so cute when they're young. There's no chance we can get one of those.
How do we explain this? It's not going to happen. But that's really important, you know? And I think that she, as a kid, you ask those wide-eyed questions, you know? And it opens up your own brain when you hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you think about what you do and how you're, you know.
I've been thinking about this a lot because I think there are restaurants where the food is fancy and it's they use expensive ingredients and it's, you know, but there's something about what they're doing that's artistic and special.
On the Line podcast is brought to you by Freitag Cocktails. I'm so excited about these. Freitag, that's me. Friday in German, hello. Friday's a great day for a cocktail. We make them in a family-owned distillery in San Diego. Chef-crafted cocktails, our own bitters, our own vermouth. We make Manhattan, Negroni, Margarita. What else could you ask for? Go to freitagcocktails.com, order them today, and they'll be delivered to your door. Cheers!
And then there's like a new class of fancy, expensive restaurants where they just put fancy, expensive food on the plate in a like, I think hedonistic is the right word. Like, it's just like selling extra fancy stuff to extra rich people to like get as much money as possible. Like, putting gold leaf on a steak does not make the steak better. It makes it more expensive and you can just charge a more expensive price for it. And so there, for me, there's like a real line where you're like, that was worth it because it was people working towards artistic goals. Then they're like pushing this field that we love. And then that was you just trying to rip me off with something that like I could put on Instagram and show my friends that I like spent more money than you, which feels wrong to me. And like,
that's too much for me too. That's too much. I don't love that. I think when I think about like sort of the evolution, I think fine dining was all about like luxurious ingredients, right? You're not going to go to a fine dining restaurant and not get caviar and not get truffles and not, you know, all of these things. And then you have restaurants like Noma that opened up later on that were like celebrating the regional food and like, oh, we don't, you know, we don't necessarily have tomatoes here, so we aren't using tomatoes or like whatever. And they're utilizing like the ingredients around them and they're making the experience special and you're paying for that. But then, you know, now you also have like, you know, things that are like Instagrammable, you know, and like people are just doing showy, crazy things just for the sake of it. Visual. And that's like, come on. Yeah. Like,
I have zero interest
in seeing that.
Right. And I think that chefs like Thomas Keller or Renee Redzepi now and always have thought about where their food comes from and what, how to use all of it, how to use every single part of it, how to use.
When you talked about Dan Barber, he's like, you know, I mean, he literally used the compost to grow a carrot, turned it into a hot dog and fed it to me. And I was like, I think this is like a food cost thing where you're just giving me garbage hot dogs here, but it was delicious. But I don't know.
You're not going to get me again on this.
A little trickery right there. But I think that's really important. And, you know, I luckily get to travel to like all these corners of the world. And I went to Armenia for a culinary diplomacy trip and it blew my mind. The way they look at food there and the way they... think about giving back and the way they think about using everything. I went to a zero waste restaurant there. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what they were doing. And the kombucha cave that they had and the cheese and the fermentation area and everything that they were doing there. And I was like, we talk about it here. Yeah. They were doing it. They were really doing it. And you know, you think that
was
we're
it like
just
a newer
these...
restaurant or was it like an old school restaurant?
No, it was newer. It's more contemporary, yeah. But they have been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, we think we're so high minded here and we're like, we're going to do this. They're just doing it. They're doing it because they have to. And they know that they have to give back and they have to have no waste. And this is the only way to make it happen. It's not that they're doing it. They're not doing it to get written about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're doing it for real.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that I come back and I'm like, God damn it, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that makes me want to do that. And it's so inspiring because it's so hard. The economics of doing something like that is so difficult. And every single person in that building has to be on board for some kind of a zero waste environment.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so extreme and so difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a lot to aspire to as chefs who give back, chefs who use whole animals, chefs who use every part of the vegetable, chefs who compost. You know, we can barely get our composting situation done in New York. You know, it's very difficult again.
You guys just throw all your trash in a giant pile on the street and let the rats and the seagulls sort it out.
There, it's a circle of life.
The most of, like, the garbage situation in New York is mind blowing. I have one quote. I know we got to wrap this thing up. I want to ask you about like your team leadership, just like you got your parent. Are you, you're so soft spoken, but you're big, so I just assume people don't mess with you. But do you lose your temper? Are you like that guy in the kitchen? I mean, I imagine you're under intense pressure, or is there something that you have that's like inspiring, a special what are you using to like help the team follow you? Help me out to understand the what would it be like working for you? Should I be scared or?
I mean, I would say I used to be like definitely more intense, 100%. And then leaving the French Laundry was like there was a conscious decision of that sort of balance of that sort of like kind of like what matters and like opening up Odium. You know, I really thought about like, okay, what is a restaurant to me? Like, I lived in somebody else's like world for so long.
Right.
Like, what is a restaurant? And like, brought me back to like the very first restaurant that I worked at, and like the kids running around, and like the family living in the back, and the wife doing the pastries, the husband the chef, them like it's like a mom and pop kind of place, you know?
It's a family.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, sort of the balance of the two. And so for me now, like I never, ever, ever yell in a restaurant.
Can you create extraordinary cuisine at that level of without? I mean, is it possible to like inspire the team? I know everybody talks about whether it's like, oh, and you're really nice, and then people want to work for you. But I'm like, actually, you know, you gotta kick someone in the ass sometimes. I don't know. Is it really true that you can inspire to lead without that?
I think that, to me, the inspiration has to come from making believers. If you can't get the team to believe in the process, believe in the story, believe in what they're doing, be involved in, you know, even the creation of some of the dishes, I think that if they are involved and you get them to believe, then that's when they invest more. And I think that's sort of the way to do it moving forward. That being said, you know, like I grew up in a yelling environment and I thrived in that environment. I've seen people break in that environment and it's not for everybody.
Yeah, if you want to be on, I'm like, not everybody has to be on the Yankees. You could just play baseball. But if you want to be on the Yankees, you got to work hard and you got to be able to put in the time because that's what it means to be part of the best. Filet-O-Fish. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
For chain. My vote. Yeah, it's for Filet-O-Fish. I'd like a Filet-O-Fish. I want
just
a crispy.
We went from the Yankees to fish. Yes. Fish filet sandwich.
Yeah, it just popped in my mind.
Did I just black out just then?
All day, baby, I had a fish sandwich, fried fish sandwich. Best fried fish sandwich I've ever had in my life. I've been searching them all over the world. I've had halibut sandwiches in Alaska. I mean, and fish sandwich is amazing. All day, baby, the crispy fish sandwich is spectacular.
What made it good?
It was so crispy and moist. It was unbelievable. And, you know, fish is moist.
Did
so
you ask them how they did it?
No, I just kind of was ashamed and shirked away in embarrassment that I've never made something so delicious. It was perfect. It was a perfect sandwich. And I think it's what I can imagine a filet of fish sandwich would be if it were perfect. And so I'm putting my chit in a hat for one day chain making a filet of fish.
Maybe sandwich. You can be there for that. Maybe you'd like be a guest.
I'd like to be invited to experience that.
Absolutely. We'll have you.
But in our wrap up, I want to talk about that because I think it's really important what you just said about your team and having a team of people who believe in what they're doing and believe in the leadership. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always led by example. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't ask anybody to scrub the floor unless they've seen me do it once, you know, mm-hmm. or I wouldn't ask my team to do anything that I hadn't done. Mm-hmm. And it was very rare that somebody, that I would lose my temper. And when I did, it was intense, mm-hmm. right? So I think there's something to be said for, you know, creating a culture that is about teamwork, education, you know, believing and teaching and, you know, that family mm-hmm. in the kitchen. And we're trying to change the sort of extreme, not violence, but, you know, that yelling culture and the throwing the plate back on the line, you know, it's counterproductive, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody is going to work in a good environment when you're throwing something at them, right? You're throwing a hot plate at them. You're throwing a hot spoon at them or whatever it may be, those 1,000 stories of chefs that used to do that, you know, more so European than anything. Mm-hmm. We're talking about being productive, right? We're talking about having different environments where your team produces for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's super important because there's been a big shift in our industry. Obviously, there's the pink elephant in the room is, it was always like that, mm-hmm. you know, and the only way there was discipline is if you had a chef that yelled at everybody and everybody was scared all the time. Mm-hmm. And now there's a whole different culture. And I love hearing you talk about how then you created your own, mm-hmm. you know, because I remember working for a chef mentor of mine and, you know, we had an environment that I always wanted to emulate. And then I went and worked for a bunch of other chefs. And then when I had my own kitchen, I went back to that because that's what I wanted. And mm-hmm. I think you have the luck of being able to create that yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's really special. And then you walk into that every day. That's your second home.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to feel a certain way when you're there. And I think that always comes out in the food, honestly. Yeah. So I just want to reiterate that because I think there's a lot of people who are listening who are in the restaurant industry, but I also think there's a lot of people who are listening who have teams maybe in a corporate world mm-hmm. or maybe just a family person. And it's like, how do I keep this all together? Like, do I yell and scream? Do I get tough or do I bite my tongue? And it's like, I think you create your own environment mm-hmm. that you want to thrive in. Yeah. And if you can thrive in it, everybody else can. I think that's really important.
British Empire was a great short game, but eventually the mutiny happened. You don't want to be you don't want to be there when that happens.
No.
Do you want to talk about jiu-jitsu before we wrap it up?
No, we talked about it before. I in my life, it was my greatest accomplishment and my something I'm the most proud of and deeply personal for me because I'm not.
What did you do? Tell us what you did.
I trained jiu-jitsu for forever. I mean, for 20 years now.
Oh, and wow. What level did you get to?
All the way up. I trained at Hensu Gracie in New York for. I started at Health Gracie in San Francisco. I moved down here with a guy named Hernando Magno, who's amazing street sports jiu-jitsu I love in Los Angeles. And then I moved to New York, and I eventually got my black belt at Hensu's in New York. But, you know, It's not something that you can really share with anybody else because it's such a personal experience of like learning how to control yourself and learning to be okay with not being genuinely not being as good as somebody else and being able to compete and know that there's no chance ever. And that's something that's hard for someone like me, very competitive person. Yeah.
But don't you think a lot of chefs are like that?
A lot of chefs do enjoy jiu-jitsu, I feel like. And I don't know what the correlation is, but I feel like for me, I'm constantly learning. It's like the more I learn, the more I realize I have to learn.
Yes.
You know, it's like blows your mind. And I'm training jiu-jitsu like on a good week. I'm training like five days a week, an hour and a half a day. Some of those days I do 2 days.
Yeah.
And like that's like I'm addicted to like
There's also like this path to you can see yourself progressing.
Oh, yeah.
You start out and you're like I'm flopping around like a fish on the floor. Mm-hmm. And then 3 months in, some new person comes in. You're like, oh my goodness. Like, I can see the progression because I'm able to, it feels really special. And there, I don't know. There is the idea though of genuinely in our lives, very infrequently do we face off against somebody and say, I'm going to go 100% and see who comes out, who wins.
Yeah.
And that's a part of our nature that we, you know, in our modern society, it's like we have to be sociable. We're not allowed to fight each other, but that's something that's part of us. And then when you get to experience it and win or lose, it's like definitive. Like there's not a question of like, oh, I'm kind of, there's no attitude. I'm like either he won or
yeah.
I won.
Yeah.
And then, and I can be okay with that. And then I can learn and move forward.
There's no politics
there's
in that.
There's no, nothing. Yeah.
And that can be in one round and it could go yeah. back and forth, or you could get your yeah. butt kicked the whole time, you know, like tap, tap, tap. And you're like, it's just like, you the desire to go back and like learn more, you know, or to be able to see, like, I don't know, to be able to watch somebody like that's a higher up belt just like put you into traps and you're just like, wow, you just like, this is like you're playing, you know, this is chess, not checkers. You're
there's
like,
one other piece of the puzzle that's amazing, which is there's no other sport where you get to train with and work alongside of, and it is very much a team sport. Because in order to get somebody ready for a fight, everybody on the team works together to prepare them. But there's no other sport we get to work with. Like if I was like, oh, I'm thinking about throwing hoops, I'm going to roll over to Madison Square Garden and just pick up game with the Knicks. Doesn't happen. But you can go into the gym and the folks that you see on TV, you're training with them mm-hmm. and they're learning from them. So that's a really special experience as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of analogies. Well, I'm just listening to both of you in, you know, jiu-jitsu and how you present yourself as a chef.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly. Like you're what you said initially about being competitive and never, you know, never feeling good enough.
Yeah.
Like I've had that my whole life in this mm-hmm. industry.
You just got to come to jiu-jitsu.
That's it. Reinstate it.
You know. Like. Anyway, so thank you for being here, Tim. Odium, I can't wait to dine there. Chain, we're look for the fish filet pop-up.
Yes.
The collab.
Fish filet. Very excited.
Let's start doing the research. And I can't thank you enough for talking to us today here on The Line.
On The Line. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
Season 2 of On The Line was recorded in Santa Monica, California at Operation Podcast. Thanks, Chase.
Our engineer and editor is Matthew Donahue. Our theme song is an original composition by John DeLucci. Thanks, Chef.
On The Line is produced by Cindy Augustine. Our co-producer and publicist is Jesse Gerstein.
Our social media and marketing guru is Kedzie Teller.
Thanks for listening
to On The Line.